Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to Innergex Renewable Energy's conference call on the acquisition of three wind projects in France. Bienvenue à la conférence téléphonique d'Innergex Énergies Renouvelables sur l'acquisition de trois projets éoliens en France. At this time, all participants on the phone and internet are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session for analysts and institutional investors, and instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded today, Wednesday, May 3rd, 2017, at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. I will now turn the conference over to Karine Vachon, Communications Director. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'd like to specify that this conference will be held in English and that our listeners on the phone, as well as journalists, are on a listen-only mode. Members of the media are invited to ask their questions by phone after this call. During this presentation, we will refer to financial measures that are not recognized according to International Financial Reporting Standards. Please refer to the non-IFRS measures section of the financial review for more information. This information provided will be in Canadian dollars unless otherwise stated. Our speakers today will be Mr. Michel Letellier, President and CEO, and Mr. Jean Trudel, Chief Investment Officer. Also attending the call is Mr. Jean Perron, Chief Financial Officer. And I'll turn the conference over to Mr. Letellier.
Thank you, Karine. Good morning, everybody. On pourrait parler en français de, parce qu'on est en France, ou presque. I'm just joking. Glad to be here to explain why we're doing acquisition in France, and particularly this one. I think it's been a very active market for us lately in France. We've seen a lot of M&A. We see the benefit of being on the ground and having done two transactions last year is certainly putting us in the forefront of discussion and basically the activities of M&A and development in France. So very happy to see these activities and being also offered some projects. Just a reminder why we're doing this type of a transaction. I think that we always said that it's important for us to be into a balanced portfolio. Lately, we have been opening our effort to go outside Canada, mainly, as you remember, France. We have looked at Mexico. Now we're looking also in Peru. The United States is definitely another focus for us. But right now, we have had more success in France, and I think that the recipe is working well. We are trying to go into the value-added project in a sense that we'd like to also to be involved in green field development. We have a team working on the ground. We have now an office in Lyon. We have people in the ground. 100% of their time is dedicated now to the French market. So for us, making some acquisition as we are doing them now, and Jean will give you all the details. We feel that considering the type of risk we're taking, the type of return that we're getting is reasonable. We always said that for us, an internal rate of return has to be looked into the type of risk that we're taking. So you guys have done some calculation, and Jean will guide you a little bit more in the view of the type of return that we're doing. But as you remember, and that's why we also are willing to have partners in order to maximize the return for Innergex and maximize the capital structure so that we can enhance a little bit the net income tax in Canada, the return for us in after-tax money. So this is basically the philosophy that we're trying to establish, growing in a way that we would be exposed to development, but also operating asset and construction assets. So we're working towards that goal. Always also to think about hedging ourselves. In Europe, the cost of the hedge is actually positive for us, so it's also helping to enhance our return, but it's also very important to mitigate the exposure of exchange rates. We want to be secured, and also the long-term financing is important for us to be fixed. So on that note, and I'll be able to also answer the other question at the end for the strategic, but on the specific, I will let Jean Trudel, which is the lead person in France, and he's the lead on this particular transaction, and eventually many more. So Jean, please go ahead.
Thank you, Michel. So yeah, I guess as mentioned by Michel, we're very pleased with the acquisition, and it should be accretive to Innergex. I guess without going into all the details of the press release, of course, but I think it's important to reinstate that it's three wind facilities. They're located in the Bourgogne-Franche-Comté region of France, which is about 30 kilometers northeast of Besançon. And therefore, it's a different area of France compared to our existing assets. And these 43 turbines from the three projects are manufactured by GE, so it brings actually, this acquisition actually brings not only a contribution to our results, but it increases also our diversification in terms of geography, source of energy, in terms of technology, and it obviously consolidates our core platform in France alongside with all the greenfield development that we're doing over the last, 18 months or so. So at closing of this transaction, France will then represent 15% of our gross installed capacity, and the wind power generation will total about 27% of our portfolio in terms of megawatt hours. And this is using a long-term average. So I guess the rationale for buying these assets that are not in COD already is that we, as I guess Michel alluded to a little bit, it's to try to accept a little bit more controllable risks and to improve our expected returns. So we want to claim basically the value change on our investments going forward, and I guess these assets responded to this very, very well. So when the seller approached us, we were actually keen on talking to them and to accomplish this this transaction. So right now, there's a little exposure to construction. I mean, as you've seen in the press release, more than 80% of the turbines have been mechanically completed. We need to put in service the last eight, and we have until the end of the year to do this as according to the planning. There's very little construction risk per se remaining in the sense that all the foundation work is practically done, and that's where sometimes we can find some surprises. So also the substation works. I mean, one has to understand these three projects are actually made up of 12 power purchase agreements, and there's 10 substations to which three or four turbines are interconnected and then interconnected to the grid to the Enedis grid system. So it actually diversifies the risks in terms of also PPA and construction schedule, because already, as we speak, a lot of these turbines are generating revenue under their own PPAs, and we're phasing it as we speak until the end of the year. So we believe this acquisition obviously generates an acceptable IRR to Innergex, which should be slightly above 10%. And the reason for this is mainly due to the capital structure that involves our non-taxable partner, the Desjardins Group Pension Plan. And I guess in effect, by quote unquote reselling part of our ownership to Desjardins, and by using this structure, it helps us bring down our own EV/EBITDA closer to 12 times, and it obviously bumps our return. At the same time, it also obviously acts as a risk mitigating measure to have a partner with us to do these transactions in France. So I think it's important to note that the 12 time multiple, could be seen as high, but it's really a reflection of the very low cost of the non-recourse debt that's already in place and the leverage that's on these assets. the seller has put in place this non-recourse project financing for an 18-year period, so that goes beyond the PPA period of 15 years. And in large part, it obviously decreases our cost of capital, so helps to pay a multiple that is at around 12 for Innergex. So that's, I guess, enough details for now. I'm also here to answer your questions as well as Jean Perron, so please, I guess it's time to open up the question period.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to invite participants to ask questions. We will now conduct the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your touch-tone phone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received. Please ensure you lift the handset if you are using a speakerphone before pressing any keys. One moment, please, for your first question. Your first question comes from Rupert Merer from National Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, everyone, and congratulations.
Thank you, Rupert.
Thank you, Rupert.
Now, Michel, you mentioned that you've seen a lot of projects for sale in France. I imagine this was a fairly competitive process. So, Jean, maybe if you could tell us, what do you think put you over the top on this deal in particular?
Sure. It's a very good question, Rupert. And actually, we have seen these group of assets a while ago already. And we had started discussions with Riverstone at the time, and so we had these assets in our line of sight for a number of months, even prior when to start again to discuss with Riverstone. What happened, my understanding, and I guess what happened here is that Riverstone tried to sell to Envision the whole portfolio. Envision is the company that bought actually the pipeline of Velocita in France. And the idea, I think, for Riverstone was to sell also these existing assets. But in the end, the transaction was not concluded. So after a process in which we didn't really participate, Envision was retained, and then the transaction failed. And so Riverstone came back to few parties in the market with whom they had discussions prior to their original process, and so they contacted us and asked us if we were actually interested in these three assets. So it was I think a very short list of people that were at the table, and we made an offer that was I guess the most interesting from Riverstone's standpoint. I think they were looking for someone to execute very quickly. And so that's what we actually offered, is something where this deal could close quickly. We knew the assets, we knew France, we had as Michel said, our recipe was working, so it was easy for us to just apply the recipe and offer something interesting to Riverstone. But I think the execution was a big factor for them, not having completed the previous transaction as expected.
Yeah, great. And on that recipe, so I understand the financing with a pension fund partner supports your returns, your FX hedging gains support the returns. What sort of terminal value assumptions do you put on this asset post-contract?
Well, that is a very good question, Rupert. And the way we're looking at it is that obviously in 16 years from now or 15 years from now, it's difficult to call for the power curve or the price of electricity. What we're trying to do is to do some scenario where we're very, very conservative with the power curve, and we're looking to have a minimum return that covers our dividend and some return over our dividend. And then we can have also a view where it's a little bit more positive about the power curve, and that provides us a double-digit return. And, you know, you've been hearing us sometimes talking about double-digit return that is difficult to achieve and all that stuff, but it's definitely linked to what is the view of the power curves on the long term. So I think we're conservative guys, and we like to make sure that what we're buying is sustainable. So our view is that we have these wide scenario where we want to make sure that in the worst case scenario possible, or you know, and I think the energy cannot go to zero, so there's always a market for the energy, but one can be more bullish than the others. We're not that bullish sometimes in the U.S. market, where we are missing sometimes. We're trying to acquire some assets or some merchant plant, but I think that France can support a little bit more the electricity price. The France alternative to produce electricity is more limited than what you can find in the United States. So that's the type of residual value. And also in France, you know, those machines working at 25, 26%, 27% utilization factor, not having very bad winter times, could probably last 25, 30 years. So we could extend our view up to roughly 30 years cash flow. Obviously, you have to make sure that you're maintaining your assets. But we think that those assets are not pushed too much. They're not solicited as much as maybe other assets or other wind assets in other places in the world. So that's basically our bigger driver. But we're not putting back some refinancing at the end. Obviously that could enhance also the total return of the project if after 18 years one would be putting more financing or refinancing the package. We're not doing this in our analysis. Does that answer your question, Rupert?
Yes, yeah, that's excellent. Thanks for the color.
Pleasure.
Your next question comes from the line of David Quezada from Raymond James. Your line is open.
Yeah, thanks. Morning, guys. Wondering if you could, just the counterparties that you dealt with in the transaction and whatever intermediaries I think John was mentioning, are any of those new relationships and something that could potentially put you in the discussion for acquisitions in the future?
I think we have found a very good relationship with Riverstone, the Riverstone Group, who's, I think most of you know that they are very active, very smart people, very present in many of the markets where we are present as well. So that's also very interesting. We've also had to connect with Envision. Envision is the, as I mentioned, the guys who bought, it's a Chinese manufacturer of wind turbines, and they've bought all this pipeline from Velocita, over 600 megawatts of pipeline in France. So it's obviously very interesting to connect with these other parties in the market. There's nothing in this deal that actually links us formally with them. So I think it's important to mention that. But it's also obviously some. You know, I mean, they know us now. They know what we can do. We've worked together. We've achieved this result so far. So it's always positive, I think.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then my only other question, I imagine, is something that's a certain focus for you right now. The upcoming election, I guess it seems as though a pretty slim chance, fairly small chance that Le Pen wins. Do you see any changes on the regulatory front in France coming, even if Mr. Macron ends up winning, or how do you think about that?
Yeah, sure. I think in this case, and I know that people have been a bit, distressed from the results of some elections and the fact that it was completely different from the polls. I think we have to still believe in the statistics and the polls. In this case, it's a bit different than the polarity of a U.S. election, for example, where we were thinking of two candidates sharing 52-48 of the vote. Here, the polls are actually much in favor of Macron with 60% 40. So, I'm not sure. I guess everything can happen. But if the polls are still wrong today in France with 60-40, that I'd be very amazed. Regarding the last part of your question, I think Macron, he was a part of the previous government. is very favorable to renewable energy. France is also directed has directions from the EU Commission on all these energy regulations. So I think unless France was to exit the EU, I think they will still be obliged to meet some form of targets in renewable energy. So I think the future is still very bright. We'll see, obviously, with the election. I think it could be a different scenario if Le Pen is the winner in this. But I don't know. That's my opinion. I don't think it will go there. I don't know.
And also, it's probably more for the future development of France. If something comes, a different political vision comes to France, I doubt that they would reopen the existing contract.
Yeah,
so obviously, the transaction that we're doing today would hopefully not be affected by future policy other than the future development of these projects.
Yeah, and maybe if I may add, even for future developments, we're not in an environment today where we need to justify renewable energy on its economic basis. I think it's become today very competitive with all the different sources that are available to a country like France. And therefore, I think if there's a need for energy or if there's a change in the mix of energy that is desired by France, I think onshore wind will certainly be a part of that. And so I think we should be confident for the future.
Yeah. Well, that's good color. Thank you very much. That's all I had.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Nelson Ng from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Great, thanks. I was just hoping you can provide a bit more color on your kind of financial arrangements with Desjardins. I was just kind of doing the math, and I think you're only putting in 61% of the equity investment, but getting 69.55% of the ownership interest. Is Desjardins investing like some sub debt, or is there a holdco debt in the project, or can you just talk about? Or give a bit more details on why that's the case?
Yeah, sure, Nelson. I guess the idea is actually quite simple in a way. We buy these assets and we offer them to Desjardins. We reused again the same partnership because Desjardins was willing partner in this case as well. But what we do is we offer the 30% stake in this asset to Desjardins on a different yield than what we get actually, so on a lower yield. It's obviously seen as a more of a passive investment from Desjardins' point of view, and they accept a lower yield because as if we were quote-unquote selling them a part of our asset, right? So it's short of doing a process. I mean, we obviously understand at what price these assets could come out to on the Canadian market. So we reprice to them, if you want, so they pay a form of premium to compared to what we pay, and then they invest also in a form of an interest-bearing debenture for most of their investment. So that actually allows us also to benefit from a certain tax advantage.
But they don't have a preferred return. We get the same return at the same time that they get, so they
exactly.
don't really have a preferred return over our participation.
Exactly, that's right.
Is that we are using pref, which is equity, and they're using debt, which is the how we finance. So we basically have a very small amount of money invested in the common shares of both parties, and the way we're financing the transaction is by us using pref shares and them using debenture. But as Jean Perron is mentioning, they're pari passu in their ranking.
I see. Okay.
So that, I guess, that's what brings this this additional return, I guess, to us.
Okay. And then just on the project level debt, I just doing the rough math, it's about 9.6 times debt to EBITDA. I guess you're able to achieve that level because it's an 18-year term. What can you just comment on what the effective cost of debt would be?
Yeah, actually, you're absolutely right. It's 9.6 times debt, and it's an 18-year term. And the all-in rate, if you want, and it's actually a function of several things: the Euribor, our Euribor expectation, also, and We actually have put a pretty conservative curve on Euribor for the portion that is unhedged. And then there's the spread that is actually slightly creeping up over time with the lender. So we have actually a weighted average all-in rate of about 2.88, but it starts at 2.3 and then it slightly increases over the 18 years. So obviously this is key to being able to pay that type of multiple, because you already have 9.6 times of debt, right?
Got it. And then just one. Okay, thanks. And then just one last question. In terms of the 4.4 million guidance for additional free cash flow, is that the cash flow that you, or the distribution you expect to receive on your investment, or is it net of any costs of financing your $46 million investment?
Yeah, actually, this is net of what we mentioned in the press release. We will finance this acquisition using our revolving line of credit. So we've assumed an amount of interest, and we netted that. So the 4.4 is actually netted of our Innergex cash free cash flow, netted of that interest expense, additional interest expense, and also netted of all the G&A and head over overhead costs. Sorry. So it's really the net amount to shareholders,
okay,
if you want.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for the clarification, Sean. Those are my questions.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Sean Stewart from TD Securities. Your line is open.
Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning.
Just one question. Just as we're considering other development opportunities in France, and you mentioned an active market for those sorts of projects, are there opportunities where fit contracts are secured but the projects aren't permitted yet? I guess I'm just wondering about an opportunity to maybe juice the returns a little bit by taking on something a little bit earlier on in the development pipeline, but that already has a contract. Maybe just give us a sense of what the quality of opportunities out there is for you guys right now.
Yeah, sure. We see actually everything from A to Z, I guess, in the range of the spectrum of development. So you're right, there are some projects that receive the contract but are not yet fully permitted, and these were resubmitted before the year end 2016 to secure these contracts. So these, sometimes we see these. I mean, the full range is there, I guess. We still see a lot of operating assets and also pipelines. There are pipelines. I mean, there's a shift, right, in the French market right now that in the future contractual framework, we will need to bid prices, and that's a big difference for many smaller developers that were used to getting the fit contract price, and then they develop their assets. And, you know, the strategy is a bit different. You know, the revenue line, you don't bid on that, so the capital structure was not necessarily as important as it is today in the context of a bid. So I think there are a lot of players that are reflecting on this right now, and they're just wondering, is the new market for them? So there's obviously a movement with all of this. So I think with the new Lyon office and the fact that we've moved a good resource there, and that we are actually in the process of hiring more, that's gonna just improve the quality of relationship that we will build, and the quality of the assets that we will see over the coming months and years. I think we've achieved this type of result today by driving it from Montreal, but I certainly expect that it's going to increase these possibilities going forward by being on the ground.
And are you guys comfortable that going forward in a contract for difference competitive bidding framework, are you comfortable that the returns would meet your hurdles for those sorts of developments?
This is a
good question.
This is a very good question. I think that every market has some particular. I think that we've been able to compete in the past, and I think we can certainly compete in the past. What we like in the French market is that those are not super big projects. They're not necessarily attracting the biggest player, and that they're a little bit more complex also for getting permitting. The French language and the culture is somewhat also a hurdle for some player, and that helps us maybe to be more nimble in France and to maybe have some good relationship with local developer that needs some support. So yes, I think that that we will be successful also in future RFPs. But as you're mentioning, you know, one has to draw a line in the sand in terms of return. And if for some reason the market are too too aggressive in ways in terms of low return, then we may wait a little bit. That's what happened, if you remember, in Mexico in the two subasta. We've tried. I think we gave a good shot at that market, but we were perceiving that Mexico was in our book was a bit aggressive in terms of market, was a little bit aggressive in terms of low return, and we'll be disciplined. And it's a matter of making sure that we ascribe a fair return depending on the risk that we're taking. And I think the transaction that we're doing right now is accretive. Sure, we would love to do better return than that what we're proposing here. But if you take into consideration the risk we're taking, the structure what we're putting in place, I think that these type of transaction is creating value for our shareholders, and we all have that in mind. So yes, we're willing to be aggressive and nimble and creative in future RFPs, but we are guys that are looking for long terms and focused on internal rate of return and risk that we're taking.
Thanks for the detail. Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Your next question comes from the line of Jeremy Rosenfield from Industrial Alliance Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just a few higher level strategic questions. Just first, let me know if you think that is there a favorable opportunity to maybe participate on the solar side in France? You know, given that there are a lot of structural changes on the wind side, and maybe there are maybe more opportunities on the solar instead, what do you think on that?
Yeah, we are actually entertaining that as well for the development. But to be honest, in the acquisition of solar assets, we find so far anyway what we've seen so far came out at prices that didn't meet our risk return profile, I guess. So we found it very hard to actually deploy capital towards far advanced or operating projects in the solar field. But in the development, yes, we could be interested in some ways or another. At the moment, we've focused on wind, but we're not against solar at all. Actually, we very like solar. It's just a matter of finding a way to develop them.
Right. Okay. And then just saying, outside of France, in some of the other markets that you've mentioned and you're looking at, is there an opportunity to use a similar structure that you've employed with the Desjardins Pension Plan to try to gain, you know, the type of benefit that you've gained here with this transaction, certainly in the pickup on the equity investment?
We're definitely open to the idea, and we like that structure. There's places where there's a little bit more room. In the U.S., it's a little bit more challenging because the tax equity structure takes creates a little bit more complexity. But there's maybe room also to do this. We're perfectly willing to entertain capital structure, GV structure, where we can enhance the return for Innergex. I think we've shown in the past that we're a good partner. We have this culture of sharing and being open and having good relationship with our different partners. We've been with TransCanada for a long period of time, even though two different culture, two different size of company, obviously. But I think we were managing our relationship with partners, pension fund, First Nation, local community. It's part of our DNA to be flexible and try to create value by having all kinds of capital structure. So perfectly willing and positive about being accompanied by pension fund order structure in Peru or somewhere else in Europe.
Okay, great. Thanks for the detail.
Pleasure.
Your next question comes from the line of Ben Pham from BMO. Your line is open.
Okay, thanks. Good morning. Just looking at these projects, and looks like the cash flow profile looks pretty stable, just like any other projects you built. I'm just wondering though, just given the multiple you've paid, I think you mentioned 12.5 times, and also just the French election just a couple of days away. Why didn't you guys wait until the election was over to actually get into an arrangement like this?
Well, Ben, like I said, I don't think that the election would change something with the existing arrangement, with the existing FIT contract. That would be a big surprise if any new government would go and try to change the FIT contract. I don't think that France is in a position like Spain was a few years ago when they start playing with the existing facility. But also the seller wanted to that transaction to be done. It's just that we would have done it a little bit earlier, but there were always some lawyers' discussion and this and that, and the bank had to say yes to this change of control and what have you. So, you know, in M&A, you don't necessarily control exactly the timeline. So it just happened that everything was ready before the election, but I don't think we're too concerned about the election regarding these particular contract. Like I said, if there's something that could change, is the future development, the future commitment of France towards green energy or renewable energy. But again, they're part of the European Union, so they have rules, they have guidelines that France is following. So that portion, I don't want to minimize the political risk of any countries, but we didn't feel that this transaction was at risk in any way or shape. So we're not nervous about that transaction. Not saying that I'm not concerned if Marie Le Pen gets in, not because of the person itself, it's because the type of policy that she can try to push, but obviously I would rather be I would be happier with Macron, definitely.
Okay. I agree. Feed and tariff prices won't change. I'm just thinking more about currency impacts, just seeing what happened to the pound, and then also maybe what people are willing to value French wind assets at, and that maybe it's accretive to your financials, but maybe your market multiple could get impacted. So I'm just thinking more about those two things.
Oh, I see. Well, the exchange rate we're fixing it, so we don't see much of an issue on that aspect. We can protect ourselves. The pound, Velocita, I don't know if they get their accounting in pound, but we're doing a transaction in euro.
Well, we're also getting euro. We're paying euros.
So the pound didn't play in that effect. But you're right. If as an example, Marie Le Pen gets in and all the French assets are discounted, would that have an impact on Innergex? Perhaps, but it's only 15% of our portfolio as well. So,
okay, all right.
I think it would be short-term live. You know, people tend to react after an unexpected political change, but I'm still confident on the long term that the French market is a good market to be involved.
Okay, all right. Thanks for that color. And maybe just lastly, how should we think about when Desjardins or any other pension plans participate in future projects? Is it more of a size sort of analysis for you, where you don't want to access external equity that drives that?
I'm not sure I understood it. Is it because it's too big for us, or is it because I'm not sure I understood your question, Ben?
Yeah, I was just thinking with this deal, maybe you didn't have to bring Desjardins in at all, potentially, or maybe you needed to. So I'm just wondering just what made you. Yeah.
The reason having Desjardins or another structure that looks like Desjardins, or it could be another pension fund, it's really to increase our internal rate of return and bring the, by financial engineering, bring a better return to our shareholder and creating a little bit more accretion to, and we're not adding risk through a sub debt or a high yield fund. We're pari passu, as Jean Perron has mentioned, and I think it's important to reiterate that, is that we're on the same level as our partner in terms of priority on the cash flow. It's just that the fact that we're using a debt instrument in Canada provides a little bit more debt deduction for tax purposes. That's the only reason why we're using this particular structure, is to enhance both in trying to have a little bit more value at the outside of the transaction by selling our share at a little bit of a premium, and also to benefit from a better tax, enhanced tax in Canada. That's the only reason why we're contemplating having a partner in these little transactions.
Okay, all right. All right, thanks a lot, Mike, for taking my questions.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any additional questions at this time, please press the star followed by the 1. As a reminder, if you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing the keys. Mrs. Vachon, there are no further questions at this time.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, everybody, to have been listening, and thank you for all the analysts that have done the research and the report. We really appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes our conference call. Please note that a replay of the conference call will be available on the Innergex website. The press release, financial statements, and the management's discussion and analysis are also available on the Innergex website at www.innergex.com in the Investors section. Thank you. You may now disconnect your lines.